Wouldn't you like to start your day like Louisa May Alcott on that gorgeous fall morning? That glowing, transcendent experience she describes is like all experience, embodied. Alcott did not escape her body to feel close to God. It happened in her body, through her senses, interacting with the physicality of the place where she stood and through which she moved, running, dew on the grass, moss like velvet, arches of red and yellow leaves. She met her God in her moving body, the feel of moist, of velvet, seeing the shape and color of leaves on trees. A very down-to-earth brush with divinity, this was. Alcott's perception about the experience of the divine in the body was in line with the romantic poets of her era, along with our Unitarian forebears, Emerson and Whitman. But it is counter to much that has happened since in American culture and UU culture. Thomas Edison, for example, wrote, "All I ask of my body is that it carry my brain around." Edison's statement exemplifies our common conception that the body is viewed as an inert vessel that somehow contains our rational thinking self. That thinking self is what is truly valuable about us. A human being, since Aristotle, has been called the thinking animal, meaning that which makes us unique, our essence, our spirit, is our rationality. This way of conceiving mind and body as separate and differing in value has great impact on our particular religious tradition. One of the primary characteristics that distinguish Unitarian Universalism from other religious traditions is the great emphasis on reason and personal experience. We take these to be important sources for theological knowledge, as distinct from, for example, scripture and tradition. Where other faiths depend on divinely revealed paradoxical truths in holy books, or on the inerrant lessons of centuries of traditional practice, UUs look to our own reason and personal experience in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. But our emphasis on disembodied rationalism tends to leave our physical selves in the dust, so to speak. And when we do this, we lose a large part of ourselves. We lose the material world, our bodies, as locus for experiencing the sacred. We lose the opportunity to experience wholeness. Theologian Elizabeth Moltmann Wendell expresses in the title of one of her books, "I Am My Body." I am my body. I don't have a body, but I am one. Pretty radical departure from the usual ghost in the machine notion. You know, the idea that a pure, ghostly, spiritual essence comes down from somewhere else to inhabit a dirty, defiled physical object that we call a body. No wonder people want to escape from the material world. To say, "I am my body," is to embrace my wholeness, and in so doing proclaim the goodness and sacredness of all parts of myself. Now, many people have reacted when they hear me say this by saying, "Gosh, I hope not. My body is ugly. My body is broken down. My body is limited. My body's in pain." And whatever other negative thing they might think of, they say, "I certainly hope that I'm something other than this body." This reaction does a couple of things. First, it attributes things to the body that are bad, a body which is not me. To do this denies myself the experience of, for example, pain. People think, "My body is in pain, but not me. I'm the real me, the real me, is above all of that. But it also places any experience of pleasure in a separate realm of body, not really in me. In the attempt to shield ourselves from unpleasant experiences, we tend to deny ourselves any real experience at all. This sense of alienation can come from seeing our true selves as separate from the physical world. Alan Watts wrote in his book, The Book on the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Really Are, "You did not come into this world. You came out of it like a wave from the ocean. You are not a stranger here." Realizing that we are bodies brings us a sense of wholeness and belonging. We are at home in the world, not in conflict with it. We are part of the interconnected web, not caught in it. Body, mind, spirit. Ever notice how some people say rise in body or spirit as if they were two separate categories? If we use split language, we continue to reinforce the idea of splitting ourselves apart. It's hard to live fully if body and spirit are viewed as completely different categories of experience. We cut ourselves off from a significant source of wisdom and meaning. I think that part of our problem is that our pictures of spirit and body are often at odds. We think, spirit is so big. Spirit is good. Body is evil. Spirit is heaven. Body is earth. Spirit is floaty up there, disembodied. Body is merely a container for the spirit. Spirituality only happens when we are quiet, still, and contained. Spirituality only happens when we're at church. Spirituality is serious, somber. Spirit speaks in a whisper. Spirit is solitary. I think it's time to reconsider these images of body and spirit, particularly since our lived experience gives us clues. While it's true we go to the gym for our body, church for spirit, work for mind, or maybe school for mind, and relationships for the heart, it's also true that we work out difficult decisions while we're at the gym. We fall in love at church, or have spiritual experiences while doing math or reading. Every day, our lives are filled with multi-layered, simultaneous experiences that tell us of our wonderful, full, and complex natures, our complete selves. All we need to do is start paying attention to our lived, embodied experience. And ultimately, when we do, we discover that spirit is really physical. Cynthia Whitten Henry, co-founder of Interplay, tells us this. Instead of the myth that sees only spirit as infinite and big, the fact is your body may be as big as your spirit. Our senses extend around the globe and connect to the great beyond. Our bodies do not stop at our skin. There is more to physicality and human physics than that. Light waves bounce off our retinas and connect us to the farthest stars. That's just so cool to think of. Unheard sound waves affect us as well. The pull of the moon affects us. We affect everything as well. This is our physical interconnection. We are big bodies. Our mind, heart, and spirit are one size, the size of our biggest, wildest, most beautiful body. Beyond the limits of the skin, reaching as far as the farthest star, or coming in as close as a baby's arms. Physicality is an expanding, contracting, flexible reality. We are one magical thing, mysterious, vast, tiny microcosms in the biggest body of all. All efforts to know who we are worthy and illuminating, but finally impossible. We are an unfolding, evolving universe. We are life, movement, rest. We are creators of offspring we cannot control. We are even death. To dance, this dance of life, is to take hold of all this mystery, have it, and love it. And when we do this, oh, what a reunion it is. I know just what Cynthia means by this glorious reunion. One reunion occurred for me one day, the day before my 50th birthday. I was hiking alone along sea cliffs on a perfect blue sky autumn day at Point Reyes in California. I felt enveloped by the vast Pacific Ocean, the fragrant breeze, the sun's warmth, and the wild grasses and flowers everywhere I stepped. My body felt as big as the universe and as close as my breath. Much like Louisa May Alcott, I was connected to the cosmos, to God, in those moments. And it was glorious. And I didn't want that intense, grace-filled God experience, that spiritual thing happening, to end. We usually think of reunions as occasional special milestones, but our experience of body-spirit wholeness is not limited to times as special as that outstanding day on Point Reyes. Grace-filled physicality has no time and place limitations. It is constantly available across the full range of our embodied experience. It's not limited to specific embodied spiritual practices such as yoga, sitting meditation, or saying the rosary. The physicality of grace is just part of who we are all the time. We just need to pay attention. Paying attention to our bodies can translate into a spiritual discipline. Now, spiritual discipline can sound like strict schedules of very specific patterns, but a broader understanding of spiritual discipline embraces repeated activities or practices that we do for our own good, the good of others, the good of the earth, or the good of all creation. So let's pay attention to our bodies in a little deeper way. We are very aware of stress and can readily describe its bodily effects. You know, the pain in the neck and the upset stomach and the headache and the holding of the breath. You know the symptoms. But what about our experience of physical grace? When do we feel open, relaxed, calm, creative, energized, connected, fully alive? Think about those times and those experiences that make grace. Those times which are natural, which are infinite, which are yes, to paraphrase Unitarian Universalist poet E.E. Cummings. And then ask yourself, how can I get some more of that grace, some more of that yes, into my life? Let me just share a few of the ways that I experience the physicality of grace, the yes, in my everyday life. Lying in bed deliberately after the alarm goes off. Smiling and saying hi to strangers. Shampooing. Chalice lighting at our evening meal. Cooking with great love and intention for myself as well as everyone I ever cook for. Chanting in groups or hearing beautiful chants like we heard this morning. Hiking and watching birds. Touching damp moss. Listening to Beethoven in a concert hall. Dancing around with friends. Making blankets for my daughters. Hand movements, sacred hand movements. And also just sitting quietly with my cat on my lap. I must say, snuggling with my fiancé. I invite you now to share your own experience of physical grace with a partner sitting near you. So just quickly find someone sitting near you. Be in twos, if you can. And if not, threes are okay. And decide who will be number one and number two, or three if you have to. Now, number two, you start out. Number two starts out. Share briefly about your grace-making experiences in life. And the other partner or partners, your job is simply to listen, not to have a conversation with them, but simply to listen and honor and witness the physicality of grace, the joy of grace that your partner is sharing with you. So we're going to share for about a minute, and we'll start. Do you have a bell I can ding? Okay. Or something? Yeah, chincha. We'll see if I can get these to work. You can tell I'm not proficient at chingsha. Okay, when I start sharing, when I ding, and when I ding again, you can stop. I'll bring these back. let's return the favor and let the other partner or partners, because I know a few of you have three, so we'll let the other two split the difference here. And remember, the person not sharing is simply listening and witnessing. So let's go. Please thank your partner. You know, there's no statute of limitations on this conversation. You can continue talking and sharing your experiences of physical grace during coffee hour or whenever. Because once you start thinking about it, it's amazing how much each of us have as our lived experience with that. Our lives are indeed chock full of grace-making, spirit-filled physicality each and every day. Let us truly have our lives every day, and let us not be limited by cultural messages about bodies or limitations. I am reminded of Unitarian Universalist Christopher Reeve, the actor who was suddenly quadriplegic after a riding accident. Reeve wrote about some of his experiences with his new body in his book, Still Me. While it was clear that while his body had drastically changed, he still lived a full, integrated, very embodied, whole life filled with grace. And wonderfully, our body spirits intersect with each other constantly. Did you ever walk into a room with angry, tense, stressed people? Yeah. And I know when that happens to me, I instantly start feeling stress in my body in response. But how about the contagion of grace. Not only can we live a grace-filled life on our own, but we can spread it around liberally all the time. Let's spread some grace around right now by joining with a new partner. Somebody sitting near you who's a new partner. Again, it could be twos or threes. Just get a new partner, please. Okay. And okay. This experience is a simple one. Becky and I will demonstrate a little bit, but you can play with it, start playing it with your partner as well. Bring up your hand in front of your body and don't touch, but be near your partner's hand. Okay? Then move slowly together. And move quickly. And move, just pulsing a little bit together. And let your evil twin come out and try to trick your partner a little. and know that your hand and your partner's hand can dance together, and that's exactly what we'll do. It's best if we do this with our focus on our hands and in silence. Let's let the music take us as we dance together. You please thank your partner. Thank your partner. and if we could just be silent together for a moment, and let's just have that experience. Just have that experience together silently for just a moment. Again, there's no statute of limitation about that sharing. So I expect you'll continue to have some noticings, and you might want to share your experience with other people as well as your partner. You know, our lives are full of grace, full of meaning, full of sensation, full of thought, full of spirit. Let us live fully as individuals, and let us live fully as interconnected, interdependent, interloving beings, bringing more and more grace into the world. Life is a dance. Come join in the dance by rising in body and spirit to sing number 311, Let It Be a Dance.